Are we starting the podcast?
Do you want to introduce us?
I think we started.
Sure. We started the podcast. Hello and welcome to A Tasty Debrief. Today on our plates, be our guest as we take a deep dive into live-action Disney movies. We're going to look at the bare necessities and see how the spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down. Or is it just Disney trying to take us to a whole new world? Let's tuck in. Hi, guys.
Hello.
You do have a gorgeous voice.
Thanks. Thanks, friends. Thank you.
Like, I feel like we should probably start by introducing us. That's always a solid start. No.
Left to right or right to left?
No. Wait. Stage right, stage left.
Oh, I don't know.
Callum, go first.
There it is.
Hello, everybody. I'm Callum.
What do you do?
So I'm film currently student at USW, and I'm sound specialist. So if this sounds good, that'll be because I've done it. And if it's bad, we're recording in a really bad location.
Wow. Bad working on Bane's tools.
That was a nice sync up reaction. I like that. It's good. It's real good. Yeah?
I'm done.
Oh, okay. I'm Greg. I'm a prop designer and maker, working on my master's currently, and these guys just found me downstairs and brought me up here. So
that sounds a lot weirder.
No, it doesn't. No, I don't want to provide
cafe downstairs.
I'm not gonna provide context.
No context needed.
No. Liam?
Hi, I'm Liam. I make films. You knew that was coming.
You did, yeah.
There we go. And the person hidden behind Jeff Goldblum.
I'm Georgia. Hi.
She also makes films.
I do the paperwork.
She's very good at it.
Thanks, Greg.
You're welcome.
We love and appreciate the work you do here on... Have we said the name of the podcast yet?
I did, like...
There
it is.
I can't stop staring at those tits now. They're just staring at me.
For context...
For our audio listeners.
And for our audio listeners, there's a little box that contains lavaliers, which are like the clip-on mics.
Lapel mics for Americans.
There you go.
You're welcome.
On the box depicts a close-up of a lady with the lavalier, but she's wearing a very low-cut dress, so it's mostly just a shot of her exposed bosom.
And that's in frame now.
Great.
Today we're sponsored by... no, we're not.
It's fine, we'll censor it in post.
So yeah, how's everybody's week? What
day is it today?
Today is Wednesday.
Ah.
And we don't want to date this podcast too much. But
it's been a solid week.
What you guys got up to?
I think I finished editing our next film. It's about vampires. We'll get more into that later. But yeah, that's been literally my entire week. Oh, I missed my partner's birthday. They rang me up and told me it was their birthday and I've forgotten.
Ooh.
So that was slightly awkward.
It's always fun.
Ouch. How was your week?
It's good.
Yeah? What'd you get up to?
But I played Witcher.
Ooh.
Mainly.
Ooh.
The third one.
Yeah. Witcher 3. And sent notes to Callum.
Yes.
This podcast brought to you by...
by Witcher 3. Well, I'm well done.
I just did a real solid nap. It was great.
Yeah.
How's your week been?
Just doing the work, doing the stuffs. Working on a sword from, actually, said game.
Oh.
Yeah.
How fitting.
It's looking real good. I'm excited about it. Should be getting into a mold hopefully next week. Got to CNC out some files, but it's looking nice. Looking real nice. Played some Devil May Cry, so that was a lot of fun. Pulled my double trigger, if you know what I mean. So shall we tuck in?
Callum's notes.
These are just notes on the films.
For our audio listeners, there's a 54-page stack of notes on the table.
Most of it's on one film.
And most of it's on one film. So strap in.
As I think you've probably gathered from our wonderful introduction, we are going to be talking about the Disney live-action remakes and the current trend of that whole thing. So that's the main topic. We're going to be focusing on two films in particular, The Jungle Book and Beauty and the Beast.
Live action and original
versions. Yes, not the live action and the original versions of both. So four films technically, but four films. Two of which have the carry on.
Two stories.
There we go.
There it is. Two stories, two adaptations, making eight. Right, that's how math works.
No.
Two stories, two adaptations. What?
No.
No.
Two times two is not eight.
Yeah. There it is. Got it. Nailed it. There's a reason why I'm in art college. So. Where are we starting?
Wow, I like how I've suddenly been pinned on all of this. Just
well, you have
I'm
a
the
stack.
Only organized
yeah.
one.
You have
you
a stack
notes.
Of notes.
This topic was your idea.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough. okay, so I think we'll start off with what do you guys think of the originals? You know, Jungle Book and Beauty and the Beast. Where do they sort of like lie with you? That your thoughts on like them in particular, the wider Disney animated oeuvre.
Oeuvre. French. There's going to be a lot of dead air.
Yeah, a lot of dead air.
I can
like,
cut out some dead air.
I feel like the main issue with looking back over the old Disney films is the nostalgia attached to it. So we can't justifiably say, that was a good film because we watched it as children. That is part of our childhood. It's why me watching Star Wars now will go, Star Wars is great. But Georgia watching Star Wars now, having not seen it as a child...
Wow.
It's awful. I hate Star Wars.
Exposed live.
Well, that's half of your base.
Wow. thanks for tuning in, guys.
Wait,
understand.
No, to be fair, I've only seen... Which one have I seen?
A New Hope.
I've seen one. Yeah, I've seen that one.
So she's seen one.
Yeah. It took me fucking ages to get out of the desert.
To be fair, my flatmate had the exact same experience. They watched Star Wars and they just kind of like finished. It's like, it's all right, I guess.
So like if... Say, as an adult, you've never watched Jungle Book or Beauty and the Beast before, the original animations.
Come across quite racist in places.
And are they going to be as good as how we view them?
I mean, from an artistic standpoint, hand-drawn Disney really was at the peak of its craft at that time. It was done painstakingly, and yeah, to a degree, you could say mass-productively. But
especially with the likes of Baloo,
but it still stands to reason beyond the story content, which are just adaptations of well-known fairy tales and Grimm's fairy tales. And when you're looking at the artistic form of that, I think that that is what you need to take away and appreciate as modern film connoisseurs, if we're going to be that pretentious about it, is
like,
that the animation is pretty strong.
As an average viewer,
I've never seen
Jungle Book, never seen Beauty and the Beast, the original animations, watching them as an adult for the first time.
Oh god. Well, Jungle Book's very racist. Like, anybody who hasn't rewatched Jungle Book recently, my good lord, go give it a rewatch. It is shockingly racist in parts. Like, it's almost as bad as The Crows from Dumbo.
I mean, King Louis is as bad as...
King Louis is as bad as, like, all of those kind of, like, clickbait articles do inform you. He's not great. But I would say, like, from an animation standpoint, and, like, Jungle Book is still a really pretty film.
Yeah.
Even if it shows that, like, there's certain areas where they've cut corners, like a lot of reused animation, looking at Chew's stone throw from Winnie the Pooh.
Well, to be fair, matte backgrounds are expensive to make.
Yeah, the artwork in them is still, like, gorgeous. There's so much kind of, like, expressiveness, especially in, like, Baloo and Bagheera. They look really, really good.
Can we talk for a second about how well Shere Khan, like, flows on screen?
Yes.
It's
so clear that, like, so much love and attention went into, like, every motion of that, and like it really shows with Shere Khan especially. There's kind of
so
like,
much love and attention went into making him look pure evil.
Pure evil.
Right, but they got his like tiger shoulder blades down.
Yeah.
You can.
That was the first thing I thought of with the shoulder blades.
It's the bit that everyone thinks about with a tiger, and they got it right for Shere Khan.
I mean, you can just like feel the skin sliding over it, and it's just really good.
That sentence weirded me out, and I don't know why.
Hey, new sentence.
So I think we've all got quite a lot of nostalgic attachment to these films.
Yeah.
I do especially with Beauty and the Beast, I reckon. Does hold up separate from nostalgia. Greg disagrees.
I think it does to a degree, but we're seeing kind of... It's an interesting question about whether or not it holds up beyond nostalgia. If you're looking at it and... artistic point of view still, yes, I'd say so. But from a story point of view and, like, did it really do much? I don't know. I mean, what's your point about holding up beyond nostalgia?
I think just, like, it's a good film.
But, like, qualify that.
As in, I think that it has distinctive artistic merit in terms of, you know, it does have quite a strong kind of through line in the story. Everything flows, not an inch of it is wasteful. You know, every single minute of that film is there, and it's establishing character, it's moving the plot forward, it's telling a joke, it's being dramatic, or it's just like very, very pretty.
Mm.
Or just entertaining. You know, there's not a single bit of it that goes by that isn't doing something of value that adds to the film.
Yeah. Okay.
There we go.
Yeah. Proved me wrong. But can we just talk about how severely uncomfortable the bit of animation is when the beast turns back into Eric and like light comes out of his fingertips?
Oh, when we regenerate. But like, we watched it back the other day in preparation for this. And the bit where his toes light up, one of them, like, there's a beam coming out of, like, the side of his toe instead of the end. Like, most of them, really irritates me.
It's also just Beast as a human looks really weird. It was very clear that they're trying to make him look like a handsome man. But drawn like
he
somebody who's
like...
never seen a human before.
Ah.
Who's had the idea of handsomeness described to them.
Mm.
But he looks like Tormund from Game of Thrones, but shaved.
He does look like a shaved Tormund, which is...
For more context for our video watchers, I'm going to put a picture up. For our audio watchers, you just Google Tormund Beardless and you will just see the beast in human form. It's terrifying.
Audio watchers?
Audio watchers.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. All right, yeah. I'm glad we all have a consensus on that because I thought I was like the only one.
No, it's weird.
Anybody else got any like additional kind of things about Jungle Book, Beauty and the Beast, the originals?
Musically, pretty solid.
Music, yeah. Jungle Book has a lot of scatting, and I think we'll get more into that when we compare the two, because I think the scatting is very much emblematic of Disney's remake policy.
Mm.
Mm.
We're also going to go into like things that are coming up, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Actually, the full Aladdin trailer, not to take this podcast too hard, just came out like yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How about them apples? Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I reject it.
You do.
Cringeworthy.
I'll
look into Will Shrek.
I'll give it this concession. Will Smith in motion is better than the still that we saw. However, Jafar does not look menacing enough to me.
Or sound menacing.
No.
Or have any kind of color at all.
Oh.
As in, like, he's got like. What happened to, like, the bright scarlet reds and everything? You know, he's got kind of this, like, dark crimson and grey.
This is a real-world Agrabah.
Do we want a real-world Agrabah? This is a world
it's
in which...
Disney, though.
Yeah?
Yeah, this is a world in which there are still a tiny, feasing monkey, a magical lamp with a blue man in it, and a flying carpet, and a lady with a tiger as a pet, and the tiger has not attempted to eat her once.
That's true.
We don't know that.
Also...
We never see the tiger try to eat her on screen.
That's fair. Jasmine's costumes don't particularly look too stunning. Like, I remember the original animation was like, whew, Jasmine.
Especially because, like, costume design has been one of the areas that the remakes have done well.
Yeah.
Previously.
Yeah,
but
like,
it's just so uninspired in this one.
Yeah, because they kept the costume pretty good with, especially with Beauty and the Beast, with Belle being the only one that wore blue in the village, like, for specific reasons and stuff like that. Like, they changed the costume to match the new version of her character better.
Mm-hmm.
With like her being an inventor, she wore like more sort of practical boots than heels, like she did in the film, like that kind of stuff. But they've always kept the costume as like the high quality thing. Like everything else that's gone weird in it, like even in Cinderella, like the costume was on point.
Did anybody ask for a more realistic Agrabah?
I feel like the only complaints about realism I ever heard about the like animated Aladdin was that sometimes he didn't have nipples.
He didn't have nipples most of the time.
Yes.
Yeah, right? That was, like, the only thing I remember people complaining about.
But, like, that's not even really a complaint. It's more of just a, isn't it amusing that Aladdin doesn't have nipples? It's a lot of the live-action Disney remakes, I'm not the first person to say this, but it is very true. It's a statement I agree with. Seems to be, have made to address nitpicky complaints that people have that are not actually massive problems with the films, but... Oh no, that one guy on YouTube who made a video where he does the sin count said this was a problem. Well, got to make a new film to address it. It's like, but it doesn't. Does that make it a better film? No, it makes it one that you can with less nitpicks. Even though all of the live action remakes have so many problems of their own, they fix problems in the original and then they create worse problems. Like, honestly, it's ridiculous.
While we're on animation too, for a hot second, just like Shere Khan plays really well. Abu in the animation plays really well. Iago, super expressive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
However, looking at the trailer, and of course, since it's a trailer and it's like snipped in weird ways, we can't really make huge, broad judgment strokes. At least I won't. I'll just kind of reserve my judgment on how that animation is rendered. But it's good that the monkey from Pirates of the Caribbean got work again.
Hey.
What's his name? Jack, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Disney always has, and it's interesting to see how it doesn't really convey with their CG attempts, has really nice cartoonist flowing styles that make, even though it's unnatural to see a parrot sing and dance and, you know, do all the Gilbert Gottfried gestures, it doesn't seem to always translate when you're looking at like a Lumiere 3D render, which is imaginative in how they kind of repurpose the candle face.
Yeah.
and like Cogsworth and how they kind of tried to recapture the whole clock hands as mustache and all the rest. But they haven't quite nailed down that almost Pixar like, oh, I can totally believe that this 3D object is existing in a space.
So I feel that for most of the time, the CG in these remakes looks really good, except when there is a live action segment interacting with it. So every time a live action actor has to physically touch or interact with any kind of CG character or object, it immediately takes out the experience. Like Jungle Book looks really good, like Baloo and Bagheera and the wolves all look fantastic. And then as soon as Mowgli touches them at any point in the film, it's like, whoa, oh, these are clearly not existing in the same plane of existence.
And I wonder why Disney as a production company has that much of an issue. When you look at like Buckbeak from Harry Potter and Prisoner of Azkaban, even Harry interacting with Buckbeak, it felt like he was actually reaching out and touching like Buckbeak's feathers, and then you have the wonderful ride along the lake.
Well, because like that they made a physical prop for them to interact with. And I think that's a fairly good jumping off point. Like, so any time that you're trying to do a CG thing, you want it to look good, you create a puppet or some physical thing for there to actually be an interaction with.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a greater melding point. You know, Harry Potter does it. The Terminator 2, the I forgot the name of it.
The T-1000.
The T-1000. The liquid metal one? The T liquid metal one shows effort.
Lord of the Rings prosthetics.
Yes. So, but that takes a lot of work and a lot of effort and a lot of pre-planning. Which is not something that these live-action Disney remakes are interested in. And I feel the lack of effort is very distinctly shown in The Shoe.
Oh, The Shoe.
Segway.
Oh, it's the shoe in the Cinderella poster.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that made me not go and see the film in the cinema.
So Cinderella was kind of the thing that sparked this advent of live-action remakes. There was, of course, others, 101 Dalmatians a really long time ago, Maleficent kind of started it, but like
I forgot Maleficent was a movie.
Everybody did.
That's the second one now, isn't it?
Oh,
it's getting
no one cares.
I'm sorry, that one person that's listening to this that cares. I apologize.
But the modern trend really started with Cinderella. I think that's fairly safe to say.
Yeah.
That's the one that like took off and made like a bajillion dollars.
Mm-hmm. Would we also consider Mary Poppins Returns in the same wheelhouse?
No, because that one is a direct sequel.
Really?
Yeah, that's a sequel. It's not like
it's also
like
a sequel to a live action film. So.
Yeah, it's a sequel to a live action for the majority of it film.
That's fair. Though I would say, which is an interesting sort of thing to look at, although I don't really have attachment to Mary Poppins as a whole, and I know that I'll probably be lynched by the whole of the United Kingdom for saying that.
No, it's fine.
Is it? Okay, cool.
You're allowed.
As I was watching that movie, one thing that did strike me is how painstakingly that they took to make the animated characters work in the Royal Dalton Music Hall segment. So it's surprising to me that while that warrants that one medium, and it was filled with, I think, still poor CG moments, cough, cough, bathtub scene, the animated characters were still super on point, and I wonder why that kind of care and attention can't be made for their CG characters.
It is because these live-action Disney remakes are not, like, I'm pretty sure that Mary Poppins, have, at least at some stage, has been, like, a massive labor of love. They have put a lot of work into that because...
And Lin-Manuel Miranda.
And Lin-Manuel Miranda, you know...
Yeah. An appropriate
love...
American in a Mary Poppins film.
Yep.
Love and attention has been put into that. And I'm not saying no love and attention has been put into these remakes, but it's very clear that the first and foremost thing is, like, mass production line, get these films out as fast as possible, relatively as cheaply made as possible, because their aim isn't to, like, capture nostalgia or to be, you know, to engage the next generation. It is to ploy on, like, people's existing nostalgia and to make as much money as feasibly possible for a company that is already, you know, probably up there for greatest liquid asset companies in the world. You know, Disney doesn't need more money. They already own half the entire universe.
But to segue back for a hot second before we start arguing that, back to the shoe. We didn't really finish up
the shoe.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Just that shoe on the poster where you've got, like, a very nice photo of Cinderella followed by clearly just a shoe that they've shoehorned in to get the point across.
It is like...
It's just at the wrong angle. What could her leg be doing?
Yeah, right. Her foot is the same size as her whole head in that picture as well. Like, the perspective is way off. And it just... I think it serves as a kind of icon for the sort of low-effort filmmaking that they put into the live actions. Like, Cinderella was fine as a film. Like, I have no massive glaring issues with it, but the fact that they couldn't take the time to make her shoe look like it's on her own foot, like it doesn't look attached, it just looks
just
like she's...
Do another shoot, like, oh,
yeah,
we didn't
right.
get one with her leg sticking out. Do another photo shoot,
yeah.
You know, you're Disney, you can afford to do another photo shoot rather than doing a botched Photoshop job.
It's a small indie company, I don't know why you think you can afford it.
Disney, the independent animation studio.
Yeah, we can't break the bank. Okay, so to segue into low effort filmmaking, shall we start talking about the live actions a bit more in depth?
Let's start with Jungle Book.
Jungle Book.
I've got less to say about Jungle Book because I feel Jungle Book is pretty alright.
Okay.
I have some issues with Jungle Book.
There's issues with it, but I feel Jungle Book is the best of a bad lot. Like, it's, as a film, it's alright. It's definitely the best of the remakes that Disney has done.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I agree with that.
Which one would you say is?
If I had to pick of the ones that we've discussed so far, like Cinderella, Beauty and the Beast, Jungle Book. If we're counting Maleficent in that deal, I would say Maleficent. But of the first three, I would probably say Cinderella.
No.
I mean, I have a lot more issues with Jungle Book than I know some of you guys have. But, like, I don't know, with Jungle Book and Beauty and the Beast specifically, it feels like they've kind of added in random crap to make it, like, interesting to kids that grew up with these films who are now adults and want to see, like, something new.
Mm.
Which, like, I don't think anyone really does. I think they remade Beauty and the Beast and Emma Watson was in it, and everyone grew up with Emma Watson from my generation anyway. With Harry Potter, and we were like, this is amazing, two of our favourite things has combined and it's going to be great. And then they threw in this whole weird time travel teleportation magic.
I think we're getting ahead of ourselves.
But they did that again with Jungle Book, with the whole, like, hey Mowgli, go fetch me some honey, like, risk your life, climb a cliff to do it. Like, it's not a filler scene. Right?
See, I'm more okay with it in Jungle Book because I feel that Jungle Book is a lot more different. So the whole film is kind of, it's not a musical, you know, the entire beginning of the film is completely different, Mowgli's a very different character, you know, the whole thing is presenting a different enough universe that where they have added and changed from the original, I'm okay with it because they've done a lot more additions and changes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I see that. I just think that, that with the changes that they chose to make, it lost something.
I would agree.
Like, Jungle Book was, like, one of my top, like, Disney films as a kid. I loved,
despite,
like,
the racism.
It was way up there. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You ignored
but,
that as a
like,
child.
I was a kid. I didn't get it. But, like, it was way up there with, like, Robin Hood, like, and Oliver and Company, which is a top-notch film. But, like, it was one of my absolute favourites. And then this live action came out, and suddenly, like, the kind of the message behind the original Jungle Book was, like, a whole forest, the whole jungle full of random animals sort of came together to keep this one kid safe. And it wasn't, like, it wasn't transactional. It wasn't so they could gain anything from it. It was, like, Baloo was just a really nice guy. Bagheera admittedly shirked the responsibility immediately upon finding the child. But he did find the kid and his family who raised him as his own, like...
Mm.
Like, there was all this, like, niceness. It was just people being nice for this kid and trying to do what was best for him. And then it comes out in the live action that actually Baloo's kind of a dick.
Yeah.
Like,
well, I had that in my notes, actually.
Yeah.
As I was watching it, it's like, oh, I don't think I noticed this the first time I watched it. Rewatching it, it's like, oh, Baloo's kind of a knob in this one.
Yeah, right? He sends a kid up a cliff to go find him some honey. Like.
Yeah. And Bill Murray's, like, a good actor and everything, but I felt kind of phoned in
a little bit.
He just seemed like a stoner in it.
Yeah,
I need to check if that's
one. But do you see what I mean when I say, like, I can look past that because I can see Jungle Book as much enough of its own thing, but the remake has almost no scatting,
right?
And so, and I feel that's emblematic as a whole of, like, the original is this, like, fun swing jazz, like, soundtrack film where every scene is, like, funny and amusing, and you've got these great expressive characters that really have some, like, oomph to them. And then in the written, like, everybody's always caught, like, the film is near constant scatting the whole way through.
It's weird, like, you think back on it and you only think of the scatting really in, like, the scene with King Louis, and then you realize actually it's in, like, half of the rest of the
Blue film. Is introduced off screen and scats onto screen. It's wonderful. It's, like, really good fun, and you, like, I laughed nearly all the way through Jungle Book. There's some, like, not just at the, oh, wow, it's so racist, but, like, at the jokes. They're really funny. It's, like, good slapstick stuff as well. Almost all of which is missing from the original, because they've tried to go for this, you know, oh, it's so, play on those, like, grand scenes, those beautiful, big, sort of beautiful vistas and everything. But they're missing the actual fact that a lot of these older Disney films were just fun.
Mm. Yeah, but you're getting into the issue that films then and films now have changed dramatically. Because people expect different content from those films.
Mm.
Since 2001, the way we get films and watch films is completely different. So, like, we can't just have a fun film anymore. Because we've got so many issues that we've got, our own issues to deal with. And we watch these films and watch other characters have issues that they deal with. And you've got, like, these dark, depressing undertones in every single film.
But then I would argue that, like, if that's the way that film is going, and we can't have, like, just happy-go-lucky fun films anymore, then leave the, like, Disney classics alone. They are, like, an institution. They are, like, the majority of, like, everybody that I know, it's part of their childhood is that they grew up knowing that, like, Baloo was a well-meaning idiot, and, like, yeah, quite, who scattered his way on and off screen constantly. But, like, if we can't have just fun films anymore, then leave the classics as they are and don't ruin them by trying to make them something they shouldn't have been.
Then I'll segue in with a nice, wholesome Christopher Robin.
Christopher Robin was great.
It was a great
movie. I missed Christopher Robin, actually. I heard it was good. But again, Christopher Robin was doing its own thing. Like,
yeah.
It's not trying to remake the original. The original is still there, and it's that wonderful, like,
but it,
rabbit
it,
got stuck in a thing and his butt showing.
It acknowledges the existence of the original, though, and I think that that's valuable. And to be honest, the Heffalump scene got me more than it should have. But so here's a question for you. If the things like Mary Poppins and Christopher Robin are cool, what if the live-action remakes, as opposed to remaking, kind of in the vein of Maleficent, took the story and moved it on down the line? Or it took the same tropes and moved it on down the line? not in a Jungle Book 2-esque sort of way, which gets, or Aladdin, Prince of Thieves, which actually is a surprisingly good movie.
Cinderella 3, Twist in Time.
I like that you've gone, you've just missed an Aladdin film.
Wait, I did.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, there was that.
Oh,
was
no. Not the Return of Jafar.
Oh,
But if they instead of as a direct sequel continuation, but like acknowledge the fact that Belle and Beast were a thing in this universe.
Mm.
This is a particular thing that happened. This is this particular witch, and these rules of soft magic are applicable to this world. Soft magic being loose rules of fairy tale magic, with kind of extraordinary limits and just all over the gaff. Think Gandalf Bathe magic. You're not really quite sure what it can and can't do. But so if this is a world premise, would you guys be more okay if it did that in the senses of the Jungle Book and Beauty and the Beast? Like, I don't know, the same jungle, but like 30 years later, and there's tales of Mowgli running around, kind of in a Tarzan-esque fashion.
I think I can safely say that I would be more on board with that.
Yeah.
Which is why I think I'm more on board with Jungle Book than I am with Beauty and the Beast, is because it is different enough.
Mm.
You know?
I think, like,
I can tell George disagrees, but...
But, like, Mary Poppins... and Maleficent.
Yeah.
And, oh god, I forgot what the other live-action remake was.
Christopher Robin.
They're less remakes and sequels, they're more love letters to the films.
Mm.
So you've got these filmmakers,
yeah,
who've grown up and watched them, and they've gone, I want to make a film like that. And then basically written a love letter to that film.
Saving Mr. Banks as well, of course.
Saving Mr. Banks.
Yeah.
Saving Mr. Banks is, like, really good, and it's clear that, like, I've watched the original's great, Don't mess with it. Leave it alone.
Yeah, exactly.
But instead do this thing that's exploring that darker element in a different way. And it doesn't always have to be a film about the film, or like with Chris Farrow, with the Winnie the Pooh film, that was almost like a sort of future telling rethink, where it kind of reimagines and looks at the Winnie the Pooh in the past. It doesn't always have to be something like that. Like, Mary Poppins Returns does it right, I think. You know, it's a sequel, doesn't make the original redundant, the original still like this magical experience, but it kind of brings a lot of those modern elements into it.
Mm.
You know, it is Mr. Banks in the original. Mr. Banks, the son of the original Mr. Banks, is you know, he's now in debt.
Mm.
You know, it's bringing those modern filmmaking things into it while not missing the heart of the original, as corny as that is.
No, but I think you've got it right. It is more the sort of the heart and the intention behind the films that I think is important with Disney films. Like, the reason I like Mary Poppins Returns and particularly Christopher Robin is one of my favorites, is because it doesn't try to alter any of what came before. It's not suddenly saying that like the characters have changed or the way that they interact has changed. It's more that like time has moved on and this is where they are now. Like, especially with Christopher Robin, it's essentially what's happening, like, with Disney films now, is that, like, everyone's kind of rediscovering it. It really is, for Christopher Robin, it's kind of reflecting the way that, like, everybody that grew up with Disney films is now returning to them in a different way, with a different perspective.
Mm.
Like, Christopher Robin grew up and became a grown-up, and he's right. And he went back to his childhood in the same way that we're all being brought back to it now, with things like The Lion King's coming out, and Dumbo and Aladdin, and I'm really concerned as to how they're going to do Dumbo
badly.
But yeah.
But okay, so here's the question of that. Okay, so if we're reapproaching our childhoods in the veins of sequels, Mary Poppins Returns and Christopher Robin, in a way that it addresses the fact that time has passed and leaves the original alone, and it kind of brings to light and hits the tender notes of our own nostalgic hearts. What about kids that are age appropriate these days for their films?
I mean, those kids are coming into it with a different perspective. The only one I can offer is the one that I have, which is, like, I saw Jungle Book when I was, like, six. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it was the original Jungle Book, and Baloo's still scattered all the time. But like,
you're really stuck on this,
aren't
you?
I'm really stuck on it.
Wow.
Just, I feel like it's a big chunk of something missing.
Emblematic.
It's important to me.
That's true.
But I feel like there's good nostalgia coying in the form of, you know, the films we've just talked about, and there's bad ones, which I would say are the remakes. You know, it's just purely, do you remember that thing? Here's that thing, except nitpicky shit's been changed. So I think that comes to our discussion of Jungle Book, and kind of where we feel that nostalgia, and, you know, how to do it well, be it, you know, Jungle Book, all these other ones that we've talked about, you know, Mary Poppins Returns and all that. Those are the relatively good ones. May not agree with us on those points, but I feel there's a reimagining less than just, look, do you remember that thing, is the right way to go about it. I would like to end on some points on Jungle Book, the Jungle Book remake specifically.
Sure.
So stuff that they've clearly tried to address, and whether or not they've succeeded, whether or not they've completely pissed the bed a little bit at certain points. So with the original, obviously horribly racist stereotypes in there, almost like near constantly. Weird seductive eyes on the 10-year-old. Do you think that the remake has successfully dealt with any of those issues, or any other issues that I've not mentioned?
Concerning King Louis, I kind of really enjoy the change to, rather than an orangutan, he's a gigantopithecus.
Christopher Walken is always, you can never, it's always a good time.
I haven't seen it, so I can't. This is the one that I haven't actually seen, so you guys gotta. Literally dragged me up from downstairs.
Yeah, King Louis actually has some menace in this one. Like,
oh yeah,
King Louis was the best bit of the remake.
He's
okay.
Very good.
And I love the little cowbell thrown in there for the SNL reference.
Mm.
You know the needs more cowbell sketch.
Hey, I'm very
from his pile of treasure.
There's
a little
cowbell. Yeah. No, okay, no, I do remember that. But there's some menace to him. You know, that's really good. And like, the scene isn't racist anymore. It's just like, they're just kind of spooky monkeys and spooky prehistoric Gigantopithecus.
You
enjoying saying Gigantopithecus?
It's a really good word. I'm pretty certain they wrote it in just so that Christopher Walken could constantly... I'm pretty sure he just walked into the recording booth and started talking, and they were like, well, we've got to make the film around this now.
Can we just get a nice soundbite of you saying that? Just nice and cleanly.
Gigantopithecus.
Ooh, look at that sound wave.
That's gonna peak so badly.
Yeah.
Climb on top of the microphone.
So that's well done. There is like, it flows a little bit better. The original's kind of slightly jarring. Again, the scenes in it aren't as fun, but it's got more of a kind of like, you can sort of see how like one thing leads to another. Having Shere Khan at the start does mean that he's actually more of a presence in the film rather than coming in like halfway through.
But that damn sound design on his voice.
Oh, it's awful.
Oh,
they
my
have,
God.
So if anyone has not seen the live-action Jungle Book.
Hello.
It's, what they've done is it's Idris Elba, who is really good at Shere Khan. Like, he's Idris Elba. I don't think he can give a bad performance.
No, he can't.
To be honest.
But just like Emma Watson's never been a bad film.
we're getting there. What they've done is they've taken raw sound effects and they have laid it in with his voice, but they haven't really blended them. It's more just like, right, as I speak, could you randomly go rrr for me, Greg?
Sure.
So Mowgli, come with me and we shall... And it sounds just like that. The whole film is awful.
So it doesn't really do a successful I am Smaug. It does a...
No, it doesn't blend well. It doesn't sound good. I can see what they were trying to do, but they just failed. Especially given the original, they didn't even try to give him any kind of raw. He was just a camp fucker.
He was very British.
I mean, British and camp is a very fine line.
Yeah, but he was kind of dominant. Like, not,
colonies.
sort of.
He was just like snarly English.
Yeah.
It's the same thing that makes Kilgrave creepy.
Are we going to talk about the parallels of Indian colonialism?
I feel that's... No.
Different podcast?
So, the original also has a lot of slightly creepy stuff going on with Mowgli's age and some of his interactions with the other characters within the film.
Two words, hypno-snake.
You've obviously got absolutely terrifying rape Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah, I'm still not okay that Carl and Winnie the Pooh are voiced by the same person.
And it's the same voice. It's very unsettling, isn't it?
It doesn't change the voice at all.
And they made that a lot better with those kind of really kind of slow, almost creepy seductiveness, where it's much clearer that she wants to eat him in the remake. Beautiful Scarlett Johansson performance there. She's got a wonderful voice.
That's Scarlett Johansson?
She's not really? Yeah,
she's the snake. Yeah, and like that scene's actually like is less rapey and more just kind of actually a little bit tight and more like creepy. It's like, ooh, she's slowly gonna eat him and hypnotize him.
Yeah, it's like uncomfortable for the right reason.
Yeah, rather than uncomfortable because, hello, little boy, it's me. Come and look into my mouth.
I'll tell you what's a really good audio. I feel like I don't know if you guys have listened to the live cast recording of American Gods.
Mm-hmm.
And they also did this really well in the series.
I
but
feel
as
like
far
American
as,
Gods needs to be
its own episode, but I'm talking about as far as like conveying that like menacing predatory seductiveness. The Bilquis scene as they record it, yeah, that kind of, I feel like if it had that kind, like what I'm imagining, because I haven't seen it, is that kind of vocal predatory seductiveness.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay.
Scarlett Johansson does creepy really well. If anyone's not seen Under the Skin,
she's
fantastic in it. And just
fair enough.
Yeah. Scarlett Johansson, great actress. Not as sort of shallow as you think she is if you only see her in like Avengers and stuff. Anyway,
in the show.
It's just confusing with the new Disney remakes because the casting is sensational.
Very good cast.
But they don't seem to do anything with it.
Yeah.
So, like, if you look at Cinderella, kind of they had average casting in that, but, like, Richard Madden without his beard, who's creepy, as Prince Charming.
It's literally his name is Prince Charming.
Yeah.
You can call him Bill.
But then kind of looking at Beauty and the Beast, you have Ewan McGregor playing a Frenchman, Ian McKellen, Dan Stevens, Emma Watson, Luke Evans.
Emma Watson was in... You're just laying.
I'm on Beauty and the Beast.
Okay.
Now.
Yeah. Segue.
And then finally,
I have one more thing.
Into Jungle Book, where you have Idris Elba, Jon Favreau has audio lines. You've got Bill Murray. I almost said Christian Bale, and that's the wrong film. That is the wrong Jungle Book remake.
Okay.
But like, there's so much good cast in all of these films that just nothing happens from it. Hell, Stanley Tucci's in Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, so it's very clear that they were great cast and like that kind of creepy element that I was coming back to. So the original Jungle Book has a lot of very, very odd scenes with Mowgli's relationship with Baloo and Bagheera. Georgia, do you want to sum this up for us?
Where are we going with this?
Baloo and Bagheera are a weird pair of gay dads and their adopted son.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
And they come across as, like, weirdly... rewatch that film with that in mind, and there's a lot of...
The film ends with them dancing off into the sunset.
Yeah, they act like exes throughout most of the film, and I think they tried to sort of, like... Not that there's anything wrong with that.
For the sake of the joke, one of them is a bear.
But I feel like they tried to sort of get away from some of those, like, slightly weird, like, two scorched lovers fighting over a weird adopted son dynamic.
Yeah,
and they tried to move away from that. However, they did not successfully make it less unsettling and creepy at points. For example, I have here in my notes a couple of lines directly taken from the film. So this is a point where there's a big pile of honey that they're all taking.
Lots
and we have a small pig covered in honey. And as Baloo licks the honey off of the pig, he goes, "Exfoliate me." And he says it just like that.
Just like that.
Yeah.
It's an uncomfortable scene.
So there's a bit where, I've been stung loads by all the bees. Oh, just put it on the stings. It's nature's remedy. And then a squirrel looks directly up at Mowgli with honey dripping around his mouth and goes, "I put it everywhere." Baloo is just randomly licking honey directly off of Mowgli's spine as they walk. It's very unsettling. So I feel that that's a failed area where the film has neglected to improve on its counterpart.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've already said that whole scene is pointless and weird anyway, but...
Pointless and weird and, like, unsettling.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it really showcases the fact that they turn Baloo into, like, a bit of a dick in the remake.
Yeah.
And it loses a lot from that, because, like, Baloo's the thing that everyone remembers from Jungle Book.
Yeah, he's like, iconic part of Jungle Book, I'd say.
Yeah.
The most. But onto a kind of a dick. Gaston, in the live-action remake of Disney's Beauty and the Beast. So, I feel that reaction. I thought Gaston would be a good place to start.
Why is there a need to try and make villains so three-dimensional and make us feel sorry for them?
What happened to the day?
Oh, no. He's just come back from the war. He's horrified by what he's seen. Therefore, what he does is completely acceptable.
I think it's to not necessarily sympathize, but perhaps to see it in a more dynamic light. Not that Disney movies necessarily need you to have dynamic villains to work.
Yeah, but like, if you're going to do that, why not have him at the end or near the end have it revealed that he's actually a coward who has this false bravado of being a war hero. He's actually run away from the war.
Yeah.
Then you've suddenly got a three-dimensional character who you still hate, who's still a villain, and then deserves to die.
Fair.
I mean, because you have to stick with the Disney rule that the villain doesn't ever die by the hero's hand.
Quite.
It's either through their own idiocy or like a random accident.
Or off a roof.
Yeah, quite.
Or off a roof. Lots of roofs, weirdly.
Clayton.
But I feel that the reason for that is because, well, that's just what you do in modern filmmaking. You make the villain sympathetic. But they've not actually sat down and thought, is this a film that could work with? Is this not? And Gaston is not one it works with at all.
No.
Like, at no point did anybody sit, like, okay, I think a good example of it is, like, Maleficent works quite well.
Mm.
Taking an examination of her from a different angle was interesting. That they've sort of, like, made her this more three-dimensional, sympathetic character. I would even say Shere Khan in Jungle Book works quite well. You know, he's not changed massively, but they've added that element of like more of his backstory. You know, you understand where he's coming from. It's like, oh, man's dangerous. Get him out my jungle, boy. Those work a lot more. Whereas Gaston worked in the original because he was like super basic.
Yeah.
Whereas he does not work giving him depth. He was always kind of a bumbling idiot, even in the original.
The whole point of him was that he was about as shallow as it got.
Hmm. Like, he's part of the town.
Yeah.
Part of the town that wants to stay there. Part of the town that Belle wants to leave because there's nothing there.
Yeah, his character's literally there to serve as, like, a personification of everything that Belle wants to leave behind.
Yeah. Gaston was the big fish in a very, very small pond in the original.
But every inch of him is covered in hair, guys.
Which they don't even... He doesn't even reveal in the song.
Yeah.
Right.
Beauty and the Beast is, I think, probably the film that's made me the most angry in a very long time. I sat there watching it, scribbling notes on how much I despised it nearly all the way through. And it's because they have just remade the original, changing these nitpicky elements that nobody actually cared about. People read it and they go, huh, that's quite amusing, that her dress, that she suddenly has a quick costume change between cuts. Okay, moving on. And they've changed those bits, and occasionally they work. And then they've just added and changed stuff without actually looking at the core of the film and going, was this ever actually a problem? And changing it just because of... That's what you do in a modern film.
I will say, though, I really appreciated the one thing in The Beauty and the Beast where they actually added in, I think it's If I Can't Love Her, is the song. And it was always good in the musical. I liked it in the musical. Callum is grimacing.
Is this the one in the tower?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Because I've seen the musical, I think, twice, three times, maybe. Tangentially, it was on in the high school, and then I saw it on Broadway, and then I think I saw it again on a school trip because that was just the kind of school trips we took. But the musical, I think, does a really nice job of it, adding as a kind of direct foil to the remake of the movie. it adds a decent amount of depth, and of course you have the theatrical camp and charm that you're coming to expect. And I like the fact that the movie tried to like be like, oh hey, the musical's a thing too, we're just gonna kind of take this little bit and kind of add a little bit more to Beast versus I'm gonna be in the West Tower and brood. We actually have more of a dramatic look at his plight in a way. I don't know if I'm grasping at straws.
I totally understand what you mean, and I can see how that would work in the I haven't seen the musical, but I can see that working if the Beast wasn't a massive prick. They gave him the Baloo treatment.
In the
remake, the Beast is a prick.
That's true.
The whole way through. Like, there's no denying that. Like, in the original, he's kind of like awkward and shy because he's been isolated for so long that he's basically becoming the animal that he's, you know, been cursed to look like. Whereas the original, he's like, he's just still a dude. He's just kind of an arrogant prick to Belle. Like, even when they fall in love, I don't buy it at all because he's not done anything nice to her.
I forget, did they have the library scene?
They had the library scene, but the context to it is different.
It's a big thing as well. The library is like the thing that starts to win her over. And in the original, it's like, I'm gonna do this nice thing.
Yeah,
she got excited when they mentioned a library.
I wanna do something nice to her.
I wanna do something nice for her. I'm gonna take her and give her this library. It's hers. She can like to do with her, she will, because I know she'll like it. In the remake, he's just showing off. And no, he never says he wants to do it for her. It's never like a, oh, she likes books, she's kind of sad here because I've sort of kidnapped her for forever, I'm a like, I'm a cheer up a bit with these books. It's literally just, look at my big ass castle. Like,
and the idea of them bonding over literature, I admire that, like adding in it, like that's a potential correction that would work from the original, is like give them a little bit more chemistry, a little bit more time to bond over it with the increased runtime, rather than adding unnecessary chaff, make a little bit more connection between these two.
Woody banter,
that works.
Books.
If he wasn't constantly being just a prick and insulting everything she likes. if they had actual, if that's a good idea, executed in the worst possible way that just leads to that just ruins the original in a lot of ways. The library scene is definitively everything wrong with that film, because it's the most uninspired set. The whole film has these very gorgeous sets, even though they're massively overdone. Why is there a weird, pointless chip in their door? Why do they have a weird, like, oddly shaped front door? There's no reason to it. Don't let the set, if your set designers ever try to go be weird with it, you slap them in the face and you go, no.
Hey.
You're a
art
prop designer. It's fine.
Yeah, but I can still have opinions on set.
You can have your opinions, whether or not they're listened to.
But it's like, for the most part, the sets in those films are gorgeous. You know, there's so much lavish detail in them. But then the library just looks like a brown, ordinary library. I'm pretty sure that that's Cardiff Central Library. Like, I'm almost certain I have seen that library before in person. In the original, it's this grand, like, light blue, it matches Belle's skin tone, it's clear that this room was made for her, and it's just so awful in the original. The context to it is bad, the execution of it is bad, he doesn't, like, get the... You get this like subtle thing in the original where he gets this like little smile and it's like, oh, am I allowed to? And then she's really excited and then he gets this big massive grin. And the original is just like, it's my library, yeah? He gives this like cocky wanker
smile. You keep
calling
the remake the original.
I know what I mean. I'm sure they'll pick up.
Would you say that perhaps Beast and Gaston sort of trade places in the live action remake?
They would if they had actually committed with making Gaston this sympathetic war hero. But they don't even commit to it, which is the worst part. They try to make him a sympathetic villain, and then halfway through the film, give up. And he just goes to being shallow.
I wouldn't say that they swap places either, because, like I said, the function of Gaston in the original was to be a human representation of everything that Belle wants to leave behind. She's looking to go somewhere bigger and better and more interesting than the town she's stuck in. And he is... like the epitome of that town. He's the biggest, most interesting thing that's happening there, and he's boring and stupid. And it's, they haven't done that to the Beast in the remake. It's not like Beast is now this unintelligent, boring, stuck in this place, like he doesn't want to leave. He's just as trapped as she is. And that part of his character is still there. It's just also that he's a lot less three-dimensional than he was in the ironically 2D film. It's like they took sort of all of the endearing parts of him out in favor of trying to make it. It's almost like they tried to give him like some kind of Twilight treatment, like make him this like brooding badass so that she'd be attracted to him. And it's like, actually, Belle's a
strong, independent woman.
Yeah, an intelligent person who doesn't go for that.
And even more intelligent in the remake.
Yeah, exactly.
She's an
inventor.
They took it away from Maurice and gave it to her,
yeah,
which
she
was
then
a good
doesn't
move.
Use throughout the entire film.
I know, I was quite interested when I heard that that was what they were doing, because they brought out that thing about her discussing the costume where she changed it to make it more like an inventor's costume. Because Belle's always been the intelligent Disney princess. Like,
yeah.
Every
yeah.
little girl that liked books was always like, oh, I'm Belle, I'm like Belle.
Yeah.
You know, and it was always... She was always going to be the smart Disney princess, and when they brought in Emma Watson, I thought it was really fantastic casting, especially after like the whole Hermione. They took it and they gave it to her, and it made Maurice less interesting, and it somehow also made Belle less interesting.
It made Maurice again the same with the scatting. Maurice isn't fun anymore.
No,
they just took
all the endearing parts out, and it was just then he was just a bit dull.
Yeah, they fixed his eyebrows. Which is a change that is good. Like, the original, if anyone's not seen it recently, Maurice has grey hair all over and this grey bushy beard. Also a grey bushy moustache. But his eyebrows are brown.
Yeah.
Even though his eyebrows should distinctly be grey by this point, if the rest of his hair has gone grey.
But
it's really frustrating.
What if he wanted to, like, look a bit younger?
I think their intention was...
Then why only dye his eyebrows?
I think their intention was to go for, like, his eyebrows are scorched off and, like, blackened with gunpowder. It just doesn't, like, show because there's no kind of, like, sketching around it. It's just slightly distracting.
Yeah.
But like the original Maurice is a really fun character. He's got these kind of like eccentricisms.
He's got his big bug-eyed goggles. Like.
And like again, the performance of Maurice in the remake is really good. It's just he's not interesting anymore. He's just like I like the idea of this kind of like quiet, more subdued clockmaker. Just don't put it in a different film. Like don't take away the fun. Where is the fun, Disney?
So, kind of thinking about sympathetic villains, how are they going to make Scar sympathetic?
Oh, no, I haven't even thought about that.
Surely they're going to go down the whole route of Scar was meant to be first in line, but he was overlooked, and then he has some kind of weird overlooked syndrome, and you kind of feel a bit bad for him, and then he does something really bad, and you're like, oh no, I can't trust him anymore.
Well, go, but potentially even playing more off of the like the original Hamlet vibes.
Yeah.
And like bringing the elements of that in. Like, I could see them almost from the sequel bringing in Scar's wife, and actually like taking that from the sequel of Lion King and actually putting her in the original, I feel could potentially be a really interesting one of these two kind of like, she's kind of plotting and manipulating, and Scar's almost like a puppet in her thread.
So, like a Macbeth Hamlet crossover.
I could totally see that as a way of doing it that could actually be interesting. But I'm 100% certain they're not going to do it because that sounds like an interesting film.
I have a feeling that they might try and Gaston him.
Ooh.
I think they're going to try and do what they did for Gaston in.
He's come back from the war.
not necessarily from the war because like they're lions, but like.
You don't know.
Like, it could just be, like, the same basic backstory, and I think they'll do it just as badly as they did with Gaston, which is, like, you know, he went away to do something for the good of the others. Maybe he was on a hunt or something and fucked it up somehow. Like, either was a coward and ran away or came back literally scarred from it and didn't earn the amount of respect that he expected, which is basically what Gaston did. It's why he spends, a good 5 minutes singing about how great he is because no one else is doing it. Like, I feel like they're going to try and do the same for Scar and make him this, like, slightly redeemable, overall arsehole-y guy, and it's not going to work.
Which is why they're taking out Be Prepared.
Yeah.
Wait, they're taking out Be Prepared?
Yeah, they're taking out Be Prepared.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. At this point, even though I see films for free, I'm just not going to bother. Because they're not worth my time.
But then this film is directed by Jon Favreau.
So there's a glimmer of hope.
There's a glimmer. I'm not excited for anything. I'm almost certainly not going to get out of my way. If I suddenly turn around and people are actually saying it's good, I'll wait for you to see it first, and then I'll decide whether or not I'll go see it.
I think
basically.
Like, Lion King is one of the best films that Jon Favreau could have chosen to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's basically a film entirely about daddy issues.
Which Jon Favreau is good at.
That's what Jon Favreau does. Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, Elf,
yeah,
ooh. Chef.
Yeah.
Oh god, what else is Jon
Favreau
done?
Shave it for the director showcase.
Oh god, there's another one that's quite important in Jon Favreau's filmography.
Right. Not important.
Basically, Jon Favreau uses examples from his childhood and his own issues and implements them into his own stories.
Mm.
Yes. So, Jungle Book is one of the one he did. That was what I was trying to think of. Lion King is the perfect example of for him to kind of go in and do his own thing,
yeah.
Because it's gonna be he's basically gonna have see Simba as himself,
mm.
And Simba's being played by Donald Glover.
Is he?
But again, good casting.
Oh, cracking casting.
There's great casting in Beauty and the Beast. Still an absolute wreck of a film that makes me want to punch babies.
Back on track.
Other issues that they attempted to amend with the film. We talked about Gaston at length. I feel we're going to talk about every issue they've tried to fix at length. Belle's character, I think we touched on that a little bit with attempted to make her an inventor. And then they start it off and they have this scene at the beginning that's massively forced where she's attempting to educate a child. And then it never, ever pays off because they're not doing an interesting, different take on the film. They're just remaking the film with nitpicky, pointless changes.
I thought when they revealed we're making Belle an inventor, we're taking that character trait from Maurice and we're giving it to Belle, I thought it was going to be important somehow. Like, either she was going to invent some kind of contraption to help in the fight against Gaston at the end, or she was gonna try and invent something to get her dad out of the asylum, or it was gonna be in some way important to her life. But all it actually made her do was look lazy as fuck, because the only time we see one of her inventions actually at work properly is a washing machine where the horse is doing all the work and she's
mm-hmm.
sitting there reading a book.
Also, can we point out that so they tried to make this strong female character and the only thing she does with it is make a washing machine.
Mm.
Ooh.
Yeah, I don't think... that's one that,
Well, they tried to frame it as she made a washing machine to leave her time for her more important things, sitting and reading.
But
come on.
Oh, dear. It's, everything they did to try and make Belle this strong feminist icon backfired.
Though, to be fair, what else could she have invented in that particular time period other than Wi-Fi?
Right, but if they were going to have... Because she has this interaction with the little girl where she's trying to, educate her and whatever.
Yeah.
If they were going to have that interaction in there to make it look like, okay, she's an outcast, but some people still like her, those people happen to be kids, then why not invent, some kind of contraption where the kids can have a more fun game? Something that'll... throw the ball for them so they can run around and something like that.
Mm.
I know that's basically a dog toy.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean,
woof.
Yeah. They could have invented something that would either endear her more to certain types of characters, perhaps a younger outcasty kid, a younger version of herself, or they could have done something that would have made her a more sort of powerful character.
Mm-hmm.
Say she's invented this thing that's going off to win the fair, it wasn't the first one, then why is it not something that isn't doing a chore?
Mm.
Because the only time we see her inventing practices at work is to invent a washing machine so that she can then sit and basically do nothing.
Well, I guess maybe to argue that, what about kind of showing that she is... breaking the convention of it. All the other town women, from what I remember, are doing their hand wash, over and over and over again. Whereas Belle, and again, the washing machine is actually, now that Callum said that, it's kind of a horrible, horrible thing to think about. But the kind of breaking that norm out of the day-to-day. I understand what you're saying about the kids.
But they already sang a song about how she's broken from the norm.
Yeah,
established.
That's how they introduce her, is with a big giant song about she's a bit weird.
It's we don't need
yeah.
it.
But
we don't need it established again. We've had it. There was a song.
Yeah, but hey, sometimes you just need a visual representation.
Why can't you just
there was a song?
Have a moment where instead of reading, she's doodling designs for another invention.
I think
yeah.
that'd be better.
All
something like that, or even especially with the casting of Emma Watson, who is so sort of vocally feminist, why not have her then offer her invention to every other woman who's doing laundry that day?
Oh, that would have actually been kind of cool if at the end of the movie they pan back over the town,
everyone's doing the horse, doing the washing. Right, but
yeah.
Like, why not have the, like, I don't understand why they didn't choose to have a scene where she's got this contraption that's doing her laundry for her, everybody chuck their laundry in and they can go get other shit done.
But
because also it's a bit of a dick contraption for her to be using during the day, because
it's
just
using a
horse walking in circles around this one place where everyone's washing their clothes, which means everybody else has to every 3 seconds pull their laundry out so the horse can walk by.
But it's a Disney movie, so they can do it in rhythm,
right?
But like, what you've done there is you've thought about the change you're going to make.
I guess that's our problem.
Which Disney again isn't interested in doing. They're purely there for those surface level complaints, so that the people who watch films and don't actually think about them afterwards are going to be like, oh, there was some feminism in it. I liked that. That was really good. You've all met those. You've all met at least one of them. You know you have. You think that the Beauty and the Beast remake is better than the original because it addressed the problems. I've met at least three people, and as soon as they are, I immediately break off any contact with them. I never speak to them.
Wow. Wow.
And
it explains a lot about him, doesn't it?
It does.
But it's another issue. It's like, oh, let's try and do this really interesting thing, but there's no commitment to it. You know, they're not actually trying to remake and like create something new and interesting. They're just purely these like surface level changes
so
that add nothing.
Interesting thing that they kind of have committed to, that sparks some articles going, ooh, number 6 won't blow your mind. LeFou.
Right. I want to breeze past this one as quickly as possible because there's nothing that we can say about it that hasn't already been said. LeFou is a pandering, coying thing, like, that's desperately there purely to get like points with the politically correct crowd. It adds nothing to the film. They fundamentally haven't actually changed his character, so he's still this bumbling idiot whose name literally translates to the fool, but they still hope to get these progressive points by going, oh, but he's a gay. There's no actual arc to any of that progression. There's not a story there. He doesn't get his own like thing. He just has these stereotypical moments of the like traditional bitchy gay you've seen 1,000 times before. But Disney's like, oh look, there's a gay in a Disney film. And then every like incredibly shallow PC person went, yay, a gay in a Disney film. And then every other person, everybody that actually thinks about film went, what the fuck is this?
That's true. Good. Yeah. But you can't say that Disney...
Did I go through the whole thing? Nobody else has got anything to say about LeFou?
No, you covered that.
You did
so
it.
That's LeFou.
But they did, I mean, in their own shallow, pandering way, they did commit there. They committed to the trope.
They committed to the trope. They committed
the trope
to a stereotype. Yeah, he was already this kind
he
of like,
oh,
he's kind of...
camp as fuck in the first one. The only thing they've changed is that he spends slightly longer looking adoringly at Gaston.
And at the end, he looks at another character. Another character who literally has no dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And has about, I think somebody tracked it, it's like 2 minutes of screen time total, including that look at the end.
Mm.
Ridiculous. Also, if you're going to make any character gay, why was it not Lumiere?
Ooh.
Right?
Yeah.
Why was it not Lumiere or Gaston? That would have worked.
Ooh,
like, that kind of...
Well, if it was Gaston, it would have fucked the whole point of him being there. So
I
understand why it wasn't.
I could see it with Gaston if they were going like this hyper toxic masculinity is there to cover up the fact that he secretly likes a dick in his butt.
And then you've also got the fact that he's kind of going after the most beautiful girl in town, even though he's excruciatingly aware that he's never going to have her.
Get a nice beard.
Yeah, but he can just chase
looks
her.
Looks like he's chasing after a nice beard.
He can just chase her and looks like he's trying to have her as his wife, but he's never going to have her, so he's completely safe in that regard and doesn't have to go around with any of the other
secretly
women.
Secretly, he's doing some kissy cuddles with LeFou.
I mean, we cracked it open.
But again, we've thought about it and we're trying to make an interesting film, which again isn't what Disney's after.
So he should shack up with Baloo since he and Bagheera are no longer a thing. Huh?
I mean,
they got back together at the end.
They get 100% in both versions. They get back together at the end. Like they could have, like, if they wanted to have a Gam in Beauty and the Beast, LeFou, sure, you do it, but like, commit to it, give him an actual arc rather than that pointless book scene. We'll get there. Have a scene, I don't know, Lumiere and this other character actually have some dialogue, perhaps, you know, or Cogsworth and Lumiere. I could 100%, like, with a tiny bit of change, see them as this slightly bickering couple.
Right?
Like, it's already there, almost there in the original, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just a little bit of change to have it, like, there's the, you know, these two house servants who, like, you know, one of them manages the clocks and is the Beast's timekeeper, one of them is the candle lighter. They fall for it, and then they both become these inanimate objects, but they stick together all the time, you know? There's no reason for these two jobs to interact, but they're always together because they've got it, you know, they are together. Like, and if they'd have just embraced that in the original, maybe they share a little metal kissy cue. That would have been like really interesting, and then I'd have been like, yeah, cool, you've got a gay in a Disney film, well done. But at the moment, as it is, it's dreadful representation.
Mm-hmm. And it's completely pointless as well. Like you said, it doesn't add anything to the plot. It's just gratifying.
And speaking of not adding anything to the plot,
segue
our teleporting book. So Georgia, let anybody right. I think I've talked enough, so I'm gonna hand the reins off to
it's
you guys.
It's so unbearably pointless.
Here we go.
It adds nothing, and it's just frustrating.
Do you want to sum up the scene for us?
Okay, so she's like, I don't know how to explain
it's
it
just,
without
it's just after
angry,
the ballroom scene.
Yeah, I know. So he gives her this magic book, and she wants to know about like her childhood and her mother, who is out of the picture, which didn't need to be explained ever. Like, we know that Disney films never have both parents in; they just don't. Like, no one questioned it ever, but
wasn't important.
No, because no one cares.
It's actually one of the things that was nice about the original was like there's so much like strong single parent representation.
Yeah, and
yeah.
No one ever made a fuss about it. It wasn't Belle wasn't desperate to find a mother figure. Like it didn't subtract from the plot in any way that we didn't know what happened to her mum. But then in the remake, he gives her this magic stupid fucking book, and they go time traveling / teleporting to like the plague. And it turns out her mum died.
Wow.
Like, great.
I must have blacked out during that because I don't remember that at all.
It's so forgettable.
It's so stupid. It's
I'd have forgotten if I didn't flip through my notes before we started recording, to be honest.
It's just, it's not even, like, you can't even give it the same excuse of LeFou being like, it's gratifying some people who want to see this. Nobody ever cared.
No,
I don't know anybody who watched the original Beauty and the Beast and was like, great film, but where's her mum?
But you see, nitpicks made a thing where they always give it a sin whenever the fact that there's a Disney character who doesn't have her, who has a dead mum. So that means they have to address it. So for anybody who doesn't know, the reason that there are always dead mums in Disney films, Walt Disney's mum died during the production of one of his films.
And felt responsible.
And he felt like he was responsible. He didn't give her enough time that she needed.
Well, there was
and
some kind of like a gas leak thing or something. He brought in somebody to fix it, and it didn't get fixed properly, and she died anyway.
Yeah, there's a lot of like because he was too focused on his work.
Yeah.
And because he was so torn up by that, he was like, right. As penance, as sort of like almost a respectful thing. There's lots of different like speculation. You trying to study an artist through their work is.
There's
a whole sort of rabbit hole. That might be a podcast idea, actually. But anyway.
Let us know in the comments.
Like, there's history and understanding behind that. It's almost a really, like, nice sort of cohesive through line for a company that makes very disparate films. One way you can spot a Disney film is through these reoccurring elements. And now it's just lost.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's weird that they tried to, like, unlose it while also having it remain the same. Like, her mum is still dead, but they tried to explain it away like it was... Like, it suddenly needed explaining, which is what I don't get. Like, it's
unnecessary closure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's closure on a thing that no one really gave a fuck about.
It's closure on a thing that even Belle doesn't seem to care about. She asked about it once in the opening scene, talking to Maurice, and then he's just like, nah. And she never thinks about it again. It's not a plot line. It's just a scene.
Emma Watson's a great actress, but her character, like, Belle didn't seem overly sort of impacted by the magic book and the time travel.
Oh, no.
It was just like, oh, cool, that's what happened.
That's because in
Paul Breed, Doctor Who. Yeah.
Right.
In the remake, they're all one-dimensional characters.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like they reduce the characters to things that they, like, shouldn't really be, and then they added in these extra bits that, like, none of the audience ever even thought about, much less cared about.
You mean,
and
like,
the characters
the
being
cursed.
Reduced as they are can't then react to it properly either.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just disappointing.
I forgot about the castle and the castle being cursed.
Oh, the snow thing. Yeah. Which specific element of the castle being cursed?
The castle being cursed in the fact that it's falling down.
Doesn't add anything. Never comes up.
The characters within the castle who have been turned into the objects, slowly turning actually into the objects.
Which is an element from the stage production, isn't it? Isn't
that
great?
It is. And actually, it could have been interesting in the film if you felt the stakes more. But the way that the stage play handles it is it references it, I believe, in like a couple of lines. And you also have
it creates comedy out of it as well.
Yes, but also in the stage show it focuses more than it does on the movie, in terms of like you finish an actor a certain number of scenes or something, and I'm sure someone's going to correct me. But there's nice prolonged lighting shots of the rose and how the rose is doing at this current moment. So it adds the more motivational tension to Beast and the other characters and trying to, like, not coerce, that's the wrong word, but kind of like get Belle to kind of be more on her side and to get the Beast to snap the fuck out of it. Because there's, you know, you see on stage, like, oh, rose petal falls, and it's a really nice, lovely, dramatic moment. Whereas if I remember correctly in the remake, there's less rose shots and more castle degradation.
It's a bad CG rose.
It's bad CG rose. But I think that what the movie was going for was trying to raise the stakes when the stakes were already high. I think that you could have had an interesting motif of the castle maybe degrading the more beast-like beast god. And still have them become more and more object-like, because that adds a nice degree of threat, but don't replace the drama of a petal falling off of a rose with a gargoyle shattering off the side of a castle.
Mm-hmm.
They're two different
The rose has been well pre-established.
Yes.
At this point. Like,
yeah.
It's another thing that just... The Beauty and the Beast remake has an extra 30 minutes nearly added to its runtime, and nothing it adds is value. Like, there's areas where you can see, like, that could make stuff more interesting, but most of the time it's pure unadulterated padding. I think that's exemplified with the opening of the film. The opening, I think 2 minutes establishes it. It's got this beautiful stained glass window shots. They're really, really gorgeous to look at. It's that wonderful narration at the beginning. Everything it goes through it, like, maybe you could say the pacing's a little bit off, but, like, I disagree fundamentally. It goes through it quite quickly. It establishes everything you need to know about the backstory of this film. The remake, it's so much longer. It starts off with not these beautiful stained glass windows. It's a shot of somebody putting some makeup on. It's instead of, you know, something quite unique with that lovely lovely opening aesthetic with that narration, it's this, why do we need to know that the Beast throws parties? But we don't. We get the idea in the original that he's a shallow prick.
Well, in a way, they kind of tried to co-opt the musical in that regard. Because if I remember correctly, and again, feel free to correct me in comments or whatever, because I'm speaking from a number of years ago of memory, but I believe the musical does open up with a nice stained glass window stage wash with the enchantress and young Beast opening the door and turning her away, and then you have a nice cut to black with the implied transformation, at least in the productions that I saw is what I'm remembering. And then so you have the beginning stakes, and that transitions into bonjour, 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 da da. And you know,
beautiful.
Thank you. Can you tell I was gonna?
This is making me kind of. I kind of want to see the stage play now.
No,
I you're really selling it to me.
It is a good show.
It is a really good show, and I would highly recommend. The thing is that as much as these remakes seem to not fare as well as their animated counterparts, Disney musicals have always been historically strong.
A lot of innovation happened.
A lot of innovation.
Well, like the Lion King doing those fabulous things with puppets.
I've Lion King still blows my mind. It blows my mind with the costume design and the way that the stage changes and rakes. And that's rakes with a K. So at a tilted angle.
But Greg. See, the stage play has a lot of very passionate people putting a lot of care and thought into it, whereas these live-action remakes are there to make money.
Well, I would also...
I'm not saying that there isn't people, like, it's very clear that, like, costume and set design, like, there's people working on those films putting a lot of work into it, but overall, like, at the scripting and, the pre-planning phase and the concept phase, it's shallow.
But at the same time... you've got to value and admire like the hours put in on like Beast's fur. Objectively, like Beast's fur, beautiful. His anthropomorphic design, except for Animaniacs with Belle, like pretty good.
Pretty good, but again, I've got issues with it at its concept phase. Like, it makes Beast less kind of approachable because they've taken away that animalistic element, because now he's just a dude.
That's true.
Just kind of a furry dude.
It's trying to fit the style of the film in a way. It's stylistic changes for the sake of not really much profit. But I think that while it is cynical business practice to have all these remakes just churned out, I would say that to say that different portions of it weren't made without passion, maybe shorting them a little bit.
No, I didn't say that.
Okay,
it's very clear that like. Attention has been put into these films, and there's people working on them that like are trying really hard, especially like I say costume design, like stunning. So much thought has been put into all of the costumes in all of those films, but at the conceptual phase it's so clear that they don't care. Like, make the shallow changes, appeal to people who don't actually watch films, they just view them. There's no point making something that's gonna last. Like, would you show your kids any of these live action remakes compared to the originals?
No, because it's CG mostly.
Yeah,
CG
is
going to
like,
be
if,
out of date.
If I ever had a kid, very unlikely, nieces and nephews, whatever, I know for a fact that I would show them the original Beauty and the Beast, the original Jungle Book. But these remakes, like, absolutely not. I'd never, like, even think about it. Yeah. There's nothing lasting there.
That's
like,
true.
Within a year, CG can look awful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. But I also think that that might be a different podcast as well, just to talk about
Absolutely. The
changes of technology over time. But I think that we've
CG versus
much...
practical.
Yeah, ooh, that's good. But
people are going to get pissed off with us because people might like, hate that. It's just an argument. But we'll get into that.
We'll get into that.
Does anyone else have anything to say about Beauty and the Beast? No?
I think we pretty much nailed it home.
Yeah. There's more, right? Anybody that... what's that? Lindsay something?
Lindsay Ellis.
If you're looking for more... pick on Beauty and the Beast for a while, Lindsay Ellis has a great like half an hour of a long video or so where she just properly breaks it down. She's much cleverer than us as well.
She has a degree.
Ooh.
Well, we're nearly there.
Hey.
So
cool.
Conclusion. Anybody got like anything, any kind of way to kind of wrap this up?
Well, I think we've kind of nailed home that we aren't huge fans of the remakes.
I think we had an original thing in our notes of like, so if Walt was still around today, I don't think that any of this would be happening, because Walt first and foremost was an animator.
Yeah.
You know, he believed in purity of films, and like trying to make films as sort of you talking about it, you can talk about like shitty business practices, whatever, whatever. But at his core, he was a filmmaker, I would argue, not a businessman.
Mm.
He was an astute businessman and did lots of things with that, but like, the dude started off making films. Like, he could animate. Like, you can see stuff hand-animated by Walt Disney. Whereas, we currently, Disney is run by a businessman, not a filmmaker. And I think that that kind of, that change is emblematic of where the company is headed with its animation and its children's programming.
Hmm. Fair enough. Cool.
Cool.
So,
you've hit the nails on the head with most things
today.
Yeah,
way to go, Callum.
I'm very passionate about Disney.
what's coming up for everybody this week?
We're more editing on our vampire film. What about you, Greg?
Just more prop work. I'll probably say much the same stuff next week.
Mm. If for any video things, you could send us like a picture of your story.
Yeah,
I'll
send you a nice little picture
Liam.
Splash. Thanks, Liam, in advance. I'm making promises for you. So if you guys liked our little ramble and chitty chat. Do we have any way that our listeners can reach us?
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be an email set up.
Yeah,
we'll set up an email in the description. If you're interested in contacting us, any of us individually, like I'm more than happy to take any things. I'm on Twitter. It's Callum Byrne, BYRNE 11.
Ooh.
So if any of you want to follow me, get my follow account up. That would be grand. And like. I'm always open to talk about the Disney films a bit. Greg?
If you want to find me, right now I'm on Instagram for Greg Jones Design. That's GREGGJONES Design. My Twitter isn't really up to snuff and nothing special, so I don't really do much there. But if you want to see pretentious pictures with captions on it, then yep, go ahead and smash that follow button. Liam?
I mean, probably the best place for me is Twitter with at Liam_Matt with two T's.
Two L's for Callum as well on mine. Sorry.
Yeah. Two L's, two T's, two G's. George?
Three G's.
Three
we'll
G's.
Probably have links in below. Where
yeah,
we're there will
be
yeah.
links
below.
We'll
but for any audio things. Listeners who want to just like, or immediately,
drop
like, I need to know these people more.
Or I need to tell them voraciously that they're wrong.
Yeah.
I'm
excited
fun.
For that. That's
yeah.
going to be good fun.
George?
I mean, if you want to voraciously tell me I'm wrong, I would say probably tell one of you three.
you'll just get blocked.
To keep it up to date with.
Well, you'll just immediately if they do it, you'll just block them immediately. I assume.
But yeah, we'll look at your comments and or questions if you have them.
Any feedback?
Feedback
well,
would
like,
be amazing.
We're just starting out. We want this to be good.
We hope it's
good. You never know. Maybe it will be.
Who knows? But thanks so much, everybody. This has been a tasty debrief. Okay? Okay. Cool.
Bye!
Bye!
Gosh, you can't end a podcast the same way you ended phone calling. Why not?
This is staying in.
Oh, absolutely.